Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Back to another exciting edition of the Thought Police. It's
Hello.
Me, Mike Graham, and him, Matt Kelly. One of the things we do from time to time is we have a peek inside our email account to see what people have been sending us. And the email account, if you ever want to get in touch with us, is this, thoughtpolicepod@gmail.com.
That's right.
And people will occasionally send us mostly complimentary
Almost universal.
Emails. Yeah, I don't think we've had any that have been horrible, have they?
No.
Because people will do that on the old review section.
Yes.
But, you know, I always suspect that maybe somebody's hand involved in that.
Do you?
You know, who may or may not be, you know, hateful. Because why would you bother listening to a podcast and saying that it was shit, right, afterwards and giving it one star? Why would you bother? You just wouldn't listen to it and you'd give it one star.
Unless
and say
you
shit.
Had a bitter little agenda.
Yeah, exactly right. So that's basically the email address if you ever want to send us an email to ask us. Why don't we have a look in the old bag and see what's there?
We will. And the first one that sprang up was from Phil Healy.
Okay.
Hello, Phil. Phil says, guys, love the podcast, thoughtful, balanced and funny. As a leaver, I've even warmed to Matt, a.k.a. New European Guy.
Mm.
Mike, you do a great job of keeping him in check.
That's nice.
I'm sure about that.
Yeah, that's nice. So a couple of people actually on Twitter this week were saying that they wanted you to turn up the next time we do one of those TV debates.
Oh, yeah.
And that we should supply you with some alcohol-free beer.
Yes.
So just as a lure to see
what
if we could get
idea.
You in.
What a good idea. As I've said before, I'm really worried that people are warming to me. They're in that,
no, you don't want that, do you? You don't want that.
Anyway, Phil asks, I'd like you to tell us about the best and worst business trips you've been on, from wrecked to war-torn. I reckon you could fill a podcast with that. Well, let's see if we can.
Well, I can probably tell you now the worst job that I ever did. And it was during a period of striking, right? And it was back in the 80s, probably. I was in America. And I'd come back to Britain for some reason or other, can't remember why. But there was a strike on at one of the papers.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you which one. And I went down to sort of go inside to see the editor. And there were people outside picketing, right? And I knew them, a couple of them.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, yeah, we're really hoping that you won't come and do any shifts here, because I'd heard there was loads of shifts going, because everyone was a fucking strike.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I need to make some money. You know, I'm back in London for a couple of weeks. I need to make some money. I can't look forward to just not work. And they said, well, why don't you try over there? Because it was all in Fleet Street, you know. So I thought about it. Then I got on the phone to the editor. He said, can you do a job for us?
Yeah.
So I kind of like, you know, I was very young. I was 20-something, right? I said, well, yeah, okay. And it was at a time, you might not remember this, but it was a guy called The Fox.
Yeah.
Who was like a serial killer. A serial fucking rapist or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was somewhere up in Hertfordshire, I think. And I couldn't drive in those days, right? I had no driving license, no car.
Yeah.
I somehow found my... I didn't have money either.
Yeah.
I somehow found myself up in this area and sort of ran into a few of the guys that were also there, who I also knew.
Yeah.
And I said, and they said, who are you here for? And I couldn't tell them.
Yeah.
So I had to say I was from America. I said, I'm covering it for The Star in America.
Yeah.
And they were kind of looking at me like, why would they be fucking interested in this story, you know? Well, because it's quite a good story, I don't know. Yeah. But I didn't have any money. I didn't know where to stay. So I spent most of the evening in a pub with the rest of the guys playing pool, drinking, right? But it came to kind of 10, 11 o'clock at night. And I didn't have anywhere to go. Since I didn't have any money, I didn't have any credit cards, there was nothing. I mean, it was just 1985 or something. And I found my way to the sort of cricket pavilion on the village green. Is it like Harpenden or something like that?
Right.
And I thought, I was just going to sleep in there. You know. And actually before that, in the afternoon, I'd been sort of going around knocking on people's houses, you know. And apparently, unbeknownst to me, I bore a bit of a striking resemblance to the guy they were looking for. So I was awoken at about 3 o'clock in the morning by two members of Her Majesty's police shaking me, going, go wake up. Wake.
Get I said, up,
what
Fox.
Are you doing? Yeah. I said, what do you mean? What am I fucking having to sleep? Well, what are you doing sleeping here? I said, well, because I haven't got nowhere else to sleep. Yeah. Said, well, who are you? I said, well, I'm a journalist. And they're like, who are you working for?
Yeah.
And I said, I'm working for Star Magazine in America. And they were like, oh, yeah. I mean, it was fucking bad news because they said people had been reporting you, had been knocking on their doors, looking, you know, looking suspicious.
Looking dodgy.
I don't think I even had an NUJ card at the time, right? And I have, it was all I could do to convince them that literally, you know,
you were not
I was not the fox and I was not fucking breaking into people's houses and I was not either murdering or raping anyone.
That'd
you know?
Be a great novel, wouldn't it?
But it would.
If you were...
Well, if they'd arrested me.
No, if you were... If you were the fox, but then you were also the journalist
trying
to hunt down the fox.
Yes. Now that would be
wouldn't
good.
Wouldn't that be great?
I came up with a great plot line for a novel actually the other day, and I've now completely forgotten. I should always write these things
down. Yes, no, definitely.
Because I completely now forgot what it was.
Isn't it weird? Because you think that, right, I'm going to remember that. And by the time you said it four times, you can't remember.
I actually wrote a novel, which has never been published, back in the day when I was fired by the Express.
Right.
Because I had some time.
What was it about?
It was about a newspaper, of course, because it's the only thing I knew about.
Yeah.
And it was based around some of the people that I knew at the paper.
Yeah.
But the story was that basically one of the features editors was so horrible that somebody killed them.
Right.
And it was like a sort of murder. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not unbelievable, is it?
No,
I mean, it's a murder mystery. She had a house in France.
Yeah.
And somehow... one of the people that worked for her found out exactly where the house was and learned that she used to take her dogs out walking quite often and quite often in the sort of gloomy, murky sort of early evening. And he basically ran her over in a Land Rover.
Right.
Killed her.
God, well, I've known
and got the job.
I mean, if that happens...
And then got the job.
Some of the journalists I work with, it'd be like murder on the Orient Express. the whole newsroom would be suspect.
Yeah, exactly. So that was probably my worst, that was yours. I think. I had to sort of turn tail and run back to London and just go, well, I couldn't... Couldn't go back, could I?
Bloody hell. I was once... So, I was while I was at the Mirror, I thought I'd transition into TV, right? So, I started to do bits and pieces of TV. And Richard and Judy were interested in my services and used to get me on... Because I used to write
What would you go on as?
So, I used to write this technology called Kelly's Eye.
I remember that.
With the eye. Was
I remember that.
Eye.
Yeah.
Right, so... It was the first internet column.
Did you know at that time that the eye... would become such a sort of, you know, marketable thing.
Well, because it was already being used
was
as
like
a sort
IMAX
of sick,
around.
What I didn't know, right, and this is where there's a funny story applied to this. So Piers had said to me, you know, write a column about the internet if you're so interested in it, because I was really into it.
Yeah.
And so we worked away and away for Dummies and loads of trials. And the one thing we couldn't get was a name for the column. Mm. Came up with Wired, then we found out there was a magazine called Wired, and it went on and on.
I remember Kelly's Eye.
Before we launched, I still haven't got a name, we had a sort of working title, can't remember what it was, and Piers came in and said, I've got the name, it's going to be Kelly's Eye, and the eye will be like the letter I, you know, I thought, fantastic. Because, of course, if your name is on the column, then you feel...
They can't just give it to anyone.
Exactly, you've got a good shelf life. And indeed, it subsequently became Lalani's Eye, which
didn't quite have the same ring. No.
But anyway, so we launched the column, and then about 3 or 4 days later, I get loads of letters through the post. This was before email really taken off, and most of them were from medical students and doctors saying, we do love the column, but you know that Kelly's Eye is medical shorthand for the arsehole, don't you?
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, well, you didn't know it. I didn't know it, but I'm pretty sure Piers knew it because at the time his wife was a senior
nurse.
Was
a nurse,
was a matron or whatever. So I
surely not.
Yes. Christ so he saddled me with, I mean, I still meet doctors, and occasionally from Chelsea, what are you doing? And this might come up, and they go, Kelly's, oh yeah, oh, I saw
that. But I'm surprised that nobody said that even to the rest of us, you know, because normally, you know, one of the things that newspaper people are great at is slagging each other off whenever they're not in their company, right?
Yeah.
And they're only really any group of journos in a bar. They're always slagging somebody off, right? Yeah. I'm amazed somebody there didn't come up and go, do you realise what fucking Kelly's eye actually means?
I think I was broadly despised in those days.
Yes, well, I don't know, actually. We always got on pretty well.
We always got on very well, It was tough because there was a lot of people there at the Mirror who, if they thought you were in Piers's gang, you know, then you would be treated with a bit of sort of jealousy.
Yes.
And, anyway, so that happened. But I'm trying to get into TV.
Right.
Richard and Judy get me on now and again as a tech reporter, right?
And did they use Kelly's eye as the...
They said, you know, Matt Kelly from the famous Mirror column, Arsehole.
That's great. Arsehole.
But then they said, we want you to do... we want you to go to France, right, with a TV crew,
right?
Because we've heard that there's an all plastic gun that you can buy in France, right? And you can smuggle it through and it won't set off airport detectors, right? So a big scandal,
right?
And it was just around after the time of 9/11, right?
Yeah.
So it was like a major thing. So we went off like with a full blown TV crew, director, cameraman, all this sound.
So it was very good if you're trying to be incognito.
Yeah. So anyway,
followed
we go
around
through.
By the camera.
So this is the point, right? So the first thing is, we go. They said they gave me. This is what's going to happen. We're going to go. We'll record a piece by the Eiffel Tower where you set it up. Then we're going to go and buy the thing in this gun shop, right? So we got that sorted. Then we're going to go to the firing range, right? There's a firing range where we'll. Like Day of the Jackal, we will hang a watermelon,
right,
and you will demonstrate the power of this gun by blowing the watermelon.
Of course you are. Right. Yeah, of course you can do that, right?
Then we're going to destroy the gun,
right?
Because obviously we're not going to smuggle a gun through the airport. But to demonstrate that we could, we're going to smuggle through a plastic Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, because, of course, we won't be looking for one of those.
No. Very rare. Yeah. Taking a plastic Eiffel Tower through customs. So anyway, so I'm such was my desire to be on the screen. I was like, yeah, whatever. So we get to the Eiffel Tower. Every element of this goes disastrously wrong. Right? We get to the Eiffel Tower, and we are immediately set upon by this gang of youths
right,
who just want to fight and come over and start pushing us around and all of this business.
Are they trying to steal the cameras?
They're trying to steal everything, my jacket, everything.
Right.
They're just like yobs. Mm. So not only am I sort of like on take 69 of this thing, right, but the thing is overrunning massively, in danger of missing our flight. We then go to the gun shop, right? And the guy who set this up, the producer says, it's all right, just walk in. He knows you're coming, right? Just ask for this gun,
right?
And it's on a piece of paper, right? So I go into, it's a small gun shop, like a newsagent size thing.
And they're actually selling guns. I mean, I didn't know you could do that in France.
A gun shop, right? Yeah, but you need a license and everything, right? So we walk in. And this guy looks at me blankly as I tell him in pidgin French what I'm here for. And he sort of shakes his head. No, absolutely no idea what I'm there for.
Right?
But we established
that. Are you still being followed by the TV crew?
No, I'm on my own.
Right.
So they sort of film me going in.
Right.
And then the idea is they'll film me walking out with the weapon.
Right, okay.
And so the guy says, we established he's got one of these things. And now it's an orange, bright orange marine flare gun is what it is. Right. And because it's marine, the idea is it's got no metal in, so it can't corrode, right? It's seawater. So anyway, so he then says, okay, fill in this form, right, of where you live.
Uh-huh.
And I go, French address. And he says, yes, you have to be French, French.
Okay.
So the only street I could remember, in Paris was a street called the Rue des Martyrs, the Street of Martyrs, which is in... what's that CD part up in...
Montmartre.
Yeah.
Right? 7th arrondissement.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, but, so I say that's where I live, and the fellow looks at me blankly, and I say, Rue du Martyr, and obviously I'm pronouncing it hopelessly wrong. So the guy gets like the French A to Z out, this little red book, and says, show me where you live,
right?
So obviously I have no fucking idea where this place is.
Trust.
I eventually find it, and he goes, And so, astonishingly, lets me fill in the form and passes over this gun in a box. So I walk out with this orange marine flare thing. So far, so good. We then go to the shooting range.
Right.
Right. And with a watermelon, right? So we walk in and the fella's like, what the hell do you think you're doing? Right. And so eventually they convince him to let us shoot this watermelon.
Right.
And then it turns out that the shooting range is also used by the presidential armed bodyguard who happened to be in the stall next to us shooting practice and looking at these strange English people with this flare gun, a flare gun, trying to kill a watermelon. Right. Right. Anyway, so we do that.
And this is one of those things you use to firing
to fire
in the air,
a flare,
to show to get the SOS up.
Exactly, but it will also fire something else,
right?
And like shots, but not nothing that would go through you, but it would injure you. And then we go outside the shooting range, and I'm provided with a hammer, to smash this thing.
Have you been able to?
We blew the watermelon.
Oh, you did.
Yeah,
oh, that's
good.
Quite good.
No, that was
because I thought you were going to say that you kept missing it.
No.
It's quite hard to do fire a gun.
Well, not from 2 feet, it wasn't. I mean. So we go outside and on live on camera, because obviously you can only do this once, right?
Yeah.
They give me the gun and they give me a hammer, and I look to the camera and I say, "And now to prove to you why this would get through security."
Yeah.
I'm going to smash this apart. Mm. I smash it apart, and all of these metal springs start flying out. The thing was stuffed with metal.
Right.
Anyway, so the producer says, "Oh bollocks, we won't be able to do that." So take away get all the springs out the way, and we'll just shoot it as though you've already done it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm there now lying about the fact that there's no metal in this thing. And then I produce the plastic Eiffel Tower.
Right.
I say, obviously, we're not going to smuggle a gun through thing. What we are going to smuggle through is a plastic Eiffel Tower.
Right.
So here's the humility.
Which, technically speaking, you're allowed to smuggle through, because nobody's going to give a shit about a plastic Eiffel Tower.
So we then...
Unless you're going to insert it up the director's arse.
Well,
Kelly's eye.
I'll tell you what, it nearly got shoved up this producer's arse. So we then get to Charles de Gaulle Airport for our flight home. And as we're checking in...
It's a very weird airport, though, with all those funny escalators.
I like it, though.
It looks quite weird, doesn't
bouncy,
it?
Bouncy escalators.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Travelators, I guess they
call
them, right?
Yes, made by Dunlop.
Are they?
They've got Dunlop logos on
them. That's right, they have,
But anyway, so we're there. We're checking into this BA flight. I think it was BA. And as we check in, the girl behind the check-in thing says, "Are you the people from Channel 4?"
Yeah.
Right. And I go, how did she know that?
Right.
And the producer goes, yeah, that's us, yeah. She says, okay, right. And then she goes away and makes a phone call.
Right.
We're stood there waiting for our boarding passes. Mm. Next thing, the SRC, the French riot police, descend on us.
Christ.
And drag us away to a side room, strip us down, all the bags opened and checked.
Right.
We're held in this holding pen, interviewed one by one about what are we doing there. Thank God they never looked at the footage,
right?
Because we just proclaimed innocence, right? The plane itself is, everyone is disembarked, all the baggage put on the tarmac.
Right.
I mean, total,
bloody
like full on operation. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm going to lose my job here. I'm going to be in a French court tomorrow explaining why I am lying about living in France to buy a gun,
right?
This is it.
It all starts to look a bit shitty then.
Suddenly
it
looked terrible. Eventually, miraculously, they say, right, we can't find anything on you go, right? So we get on the plane.
And was this as a result of you purchasing the gun?
This is the kicker, right? The producer had phoned Charles de Gaulle Airport the week before and said, "Hiya, I'm from the Richard and Judy show. We're going to do a piece about smuggling guns through airports."
What a dickhead.
Right. Well, is it okay to film in Charles de Gaulle Airport? Right.
What a total prick.
At which point the Charles de Gaulle Airport said, "What flight are you on?" "Oh, no problem. We'll see you when you get here." And honestly, so...
How fucking idiotic is that?
Mate, honestly, so we eventually get back to London.
Jesus
and then
Christ.
The next day I have to go into this into the studio and pretend everything was normal. But
did they run the piece?
They ran the piece and I sat there...
Complete with the fake hammer.
Mate, no, not the fake hammer, with the fucking Eiffel Tower, right? And Richard looking at the Eiffel Tower and saying, "That could so easily have been a gun, couldn't it?" And we go,
but
it wasn't, was it?
Did he in those days have a very strong smell of Eau Sauvage? Because now he does. He used to come in to talk radio to do the odd show.
Oh.
And I've got Eau Sauvage, which is the reason I recognise it.
Right.
It's the one that Johnny Depp advertises, you know.
Yes.
But, I mean, this guy, it smells like he's literally tipped it over the top of his head.
Right.
Apparently carries it around with him.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen him for years.
I mean, I'm talking about earlier this year I saw him.
Right.
And he has this incredible waft of cologne about
him. I can't stand that, can you?
No. I mean, I do wear aftershave, but I don't put loads of it on. Nah, I just put loads
of it on. I can't smell it on you.
No, I mean, you'd have to be nuzzling into my neck.
But some people...
in order to smell it, which is clearly why I do it.
Experiment later.
I do it for the rush hour, you know. But yeah, you know, it's one of those things I've ended up with this ridiculous collection of aftershave.
Yeah, right.
Because whenever I go anywhere, I don't take it on the grounds that I'm probably going to lose it because they won't let me take it through.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just buy a new one.
Yeah.
Do you know how many different bottles of aftershave
I've got? No idea.
Nine.
Nine?
Yeah.
Not all the same thing?
No, no, all different.
All different aftershaves?
Nine different aftershaves. Wow. I don't think I'm ever going
to
run out.
Now, you see, my wife would say you'd need to get a signature one and stick to it. Otherwise...
Would she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've got nine signature ones, so what's wrong with that?
Just as much wrong as having nine signatures, basically.
Well, we've all had fake. Do you know? Did I ever tell you the story of the fake business I had to set up to buy prawns?
No,
let me tell you that one. I was in New York. I mean, some of the stuff that you forget that you've done is ridiculous, right? Yeah. I had to buy. There was some kind. It was a Sunday Times Insight job, right? And I used to do quite a lot of work for. There was a guy called Patrick Masters. He was terribly tall, and I think he was an ex-spook. He was terribly well spoken.
Yeah.
He was about 6'5",
right?
And very well dressed and very sort of posh. And he ran the Sunday Times Insight team for a while. And he rang me. I was in New York, and he said, "We're going to do like a sting operation on this. It's a big illegal prawn business going on,
right,
where people were basically selling prawns into the European Union,
right,
but they weren't fished in the European Union, they were fished over on the American side, right,
right,
which apparently was a no-no. I don't know what this means for EU trade or anything like that, but there was this company that was based in New Jersey,
right,
who were running it,
it was based in New
Jersey. And it was like a scene for The Sopranos, you know, even though The Sopranos wasn't done then. I remember I had to drive through this kind of area which was full of reeds, you know, like sort of place they'd bury bodies, and found this sort of old porter cabin style office at the end of this road.
Yeah.
And I had to go in there and work. And I said to Patrick, I said, look, I can't pretend. I said, I'm only 25 or whatever I was. Yeah. I said, I can't pretend to be the owner. I said, I'll have to be like the middleman or something. So I had to pretend to be the middleman.
Right.
And I was there to buy some ludicrous amount of like, I think it was 50,000 quid's worth of fish from these people. I mean, it was just incredible.
Yeah.
And they were going to deliver it into this fucking port in England.
Yeah.
I think it was either the one in Bristol or the one in or Hartlepool or somewhere. I can't remember. But they were basically, you know, we were doing business and exposing these people.
With the fish mafia.
With the fish mafia. It was one of the most bizarre things I've ever done.
He sleeps with the fish.
Yeah. And I had to get a phone. In those days in America, you could get a phone service. So you could invent a phone number.
Yeah.
And when it rang, it would be forwarded to this place where they would go, you know, whatever you wanted to say. So whatever the fucking name of the country. So they never knew who I was.
No.
They never knew where I lived. All they knew was that they could leave a message at this fucking...
And did you end up exposing this?
We did.
International
fraud? We did.
Fraud.
Yeah, but of course I couldn't have my name on the story, which is all I cared about in those days, you know, because I was just part of the Sunday Times Insight team. Very bizarre.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
So now you have to tell us the best one, don't
you? Oh man, I've been on
so many.
There's
been so many. Well, listen, you've had some great work. Like the best, post the Mirror.
Yeah.
You told us about going to Argentina, going to Barcelona.
Yeah, I've had some wonderful work trips. Mm. But the best freebie I've ever had in my life, which we could, you wouldn't be able to do it now, I think, because of the Bribery Act, which is, in case people don't know, the Bribery Act, I think it means you've got to have a really good reason to accept something that's worth more than, you know, 50 quid or something like this. But once...
Does that mean nobody does travel pieces anymore?
Well, they do. No, but that's work, isn't it? So you're producing a travel review.
I suppose.
But you can't just go on what I'm about to tell you, which was... do you remember when Des Kelly was deputy and Des was going out with Carol Vorderman at the time? And Des had been offered a trip by Vodafone to the Monaco Grand Prix.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the time when Vodafone sponsored the Ferrari team. Right?
Okay.
So, good trip.
Nice.
And Des, at the last minute, can't go and... as a favour to me, came up and said, would you like to take Nadia and go off to Monaco for the Grand Prix? Yes, please.
Why not? Indeed.
So we get on the plane, and sitting behind us is a fella called Peter Kenyon, who was the chief executive of Man United at the time. And in front
he went
of
to
us,
Chelsea after that, didn't he?
He did, yeah. And in front of us is Johnny Walker, the radio DJ, with his
And
wife.
Is this a private plane?
No. This is a commercial 737. And it was pretty much full of Vodafone guests for this thing. Right, so we're very excited. We get on, and as we get off the plane in Nice, me, Nadia, Johnny Walker and Tiggy, his wife, and Peter Kenyon and his wife or girlfriend at the time, were pulled aside by the Vodafone thing as all the others got on board these coaches to make the journey to Nice.
Right.
And the woman said to us, you're going by helicopter.
Nice.
So, because you're the special ones, we're segmenting you off.
Right.
So we were only special.
Did they think you were...
No. But we had fallen into... They'd obviously booked everything.
They thought you were related to it.
For 6 years.
Exactly.
Anyway, so we get into this chopper. Right. We're flown into Monaco.
Beautiful.
And then we get into a limo and we're taken to a suite at the Hotel Metropole, which is the one on Casino Square, right? Overlooking the track, right? Mm. So, and on the bed is a bag... Two bags, a Ferrari branded bag, full of gear,
just stuff,
like headphones and t-shirts and jackets, everything. Fantastic. Then we get a letter through the door saying, "You probably don't want to go out with all of the others. What we've done is we've booked you and the other two couples in the Metropole. We've booked you private tables at the Hermitage restaurants across the road. Order what you like. It's all on us, right?" So we're sitting there.
Those are the days.
I mean, honestly, we're sitting there and taking...
What was your job at the time? Were you
I was just like, you know, either night editor or feature editor or something like this. Right. You know, basically nothing.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying is the reason I ask you that is because, you know, we've all done now quite a lot of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And in those days, you probably hadn't done anything like that.
No, nothing. I mean, nothing like this.
Yeah.
So we have our lovely meal to ourselves. And the next day is the Saturday. So it's all qualifying. So we spend... Wonderful day with the team and all of that. We then have dinner that night on the Vodafone yacht, which is the second biggest yacht in the harbour at the time.
Right. And usually they're right on the actual track, aren't they?
It's right on the track. Yeah. You know where the swimming pool is? Just a bit.
The only reason I know that is because Alan Brazil went down there at the time. And when he came back, said he'd had a fantastic time.
Yeah.
And he was on one of those yachts that's right on the track.
Oh, mate, it was amazing.
And he said, it's fantastic. You know, and we said, what did you make of the race? I didn't see it.
Well,
the
best thing about this was that all the plebs were walking past, looking at us on the sort of balcony at the back of the boat,
right.
You know, being served this amazing dinner. Wonderful. And then, so we have that, then we go back to bed. The next day is the day of the race.
Wow.
So Vodafone have hired this balcony of a private flat. Well, they've hired the whole flat, but it's got a balcony over the start and finish line.
Okay.
But it's so high up, you can see pretty much all the race, apart from the bit where it goes into the Casino Square and then down. And Rio Ferdinand's there, and, you know, a couple of other celebs.
Right.
And me and Nadia watch this thing and then watch the race. And then they say, as soon as they cross the finishing line, your helicopter's waiting for you. So we rush off and we're helicoptered out. And it was honestly...
Well, so back onto a plane home.
And then back home. I mean, it was the most extraordinary... I mean, you couldn't buy it, for one. But it was probably worth about 100,000 quid for the two of us, you know, as an experience.
Oh, for sure. Because the dinners themselves would have been 1,000 quid, probably.
Oh, you know, mate, honestly.
The drinking would have been probably 2,000 or 3,000 over the course
of the next weekend. Days. It was the Champions. It was the Champions League final at Manchester United at Old Trafford,
right?
And we were given Vodafone sponsored, given tickets in the box, director's box.
Wow.
And I went with Connor Hannah. Do you remember Connor?
Yeah, I do remember Connor.
And Connor was a big Man United fan.
Yeah.
I think it was the only time in my life that I'd impressed Connor.
Right.
Who generally had a sort of
vaguely low opinion. Belfast take on the world.
But he was impressed with this. And we were sat in the director's box with Silvio Berlusconi in front of us, who had on an AC Milan tie, which at the end of the game...
Did he have any of his bunga bunga girls with
him? No, he didn't, unfortunately. But at the end of the game, I had on a tie rack, silk tie rack, which I paid about a tenner for.
Right.
And I took my tie off and tapped him on the shoulder and said, swapsy, swapsy, and he was so excited. I got Berlusconi's tie, and he got my tie rack.
Tremendous.
But we went around taking photos. Yeah. Connor wanted his photo with all the Bobby Charlton and Alex Ferguson.
Which is the right thing to do, actually, because I mean, I've been in lots of situations where you've gone, you know what, I should have, you know, I should have had a picture done with these guys. But you kind of, for some reason, you feel like you don't want to be a dick. Well, and, so, and also you want to make out like you do this all the time.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. That's the other thing. You don't want to be impressed.
Yeah, right.
Well, Alex Ferguson was fantastic, you know, really wonderful. Bobby Charlton sort of smiled for the duration of the flash. Mm. You know, you only knew he was smiling because he was there on the photo. But Viv Anderson was watching all of this in the corner, right? And I could see Viv Anderson watching us, and you could tell that he was thinking, oh, well, I hope they come around and ask for my photo.
Yeah.
So anyway, we work our way around the director's box, and we go up to Viv Anderson and say to him, Viv, any chance of a photo?
Yeah.
And he says, certainly, boys. And I gave him the camera.
Right.
And, I said, and then she was sort of cuddled up to Connor, and Viv Anderson took the photo.
That is great. Yeah, I mean, whenever you're with those kind of people, you kind of, and as I say, we've all kind of now done it a few times.
Yeah.
And you kind of, you sort of are in awe of it, but also it's not until, I mean, like my kind of experience like that was not work related in a way. It was just when I met, when I went to see Steve Lillywhite, who's now my mate.
Yeah.
As a result of him just appearing on the shows and stuff that we used to do. And I went to New York to see my mother, funnily enough. And I texted him at some point about something. And I said, I'll be back in London. I'm going to be in New York. He said, I'm in New York at the moment. I said, oh, great. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm doing U2's new album.
What? Great.
And I went, oh, right, okay, that's nice. He said, why don't you come down?
Oh, man. To the studio?
Yeah. Oh. And I'm kind of, you know, I'm not a massive U2 fan, but my other half is unbelievably, like, in love with U2.
Yeah.
Has had all their fucking albums since the year dot, you know. Anyway, so I was like, okay. And it was like a long weekend, and I was supposed to come down because I'd gone up to Connecticut, and I kept waiting for him to text me to say, you know, why don't we meet somewhere else? Blah, blah, blah. Monday, I come back into Manhattan. And I texted him, and he's like, oh, yeah, come down about 12, you know, because, you know, the band don't arrive usually until a bit later on.
Yeah.
And I walk into this place called Electric Lady Studios, which is down on West 9th Street in sort of Lower West Side. And it's a very unassuming little kind of frontage, but you walk in, and it's where Adele's made her last album. It's where fucking, you know, the Rolling Stones have recorded stuff. I mean, everyone's been there, you know. And I'm quite a muso anyway, and I was just kind of just taking it all in. And we go downstairs, and there's the fucking studio.
Yeah.
And with all the guitars and the drums and the mixing desk. And the mixing desk got little sort of, you know, little strips of, you know, Bono on this line here. You know, over there's fucking Adam.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of going.
Totally.
And then they start playing me some of the stuff. And and you know what recording studios are like. And I'm just kind of
I've never been in one.
This is incredible. I mean, and they're really small, but very cool, you know.
Yeah.
And so he introduced me to this guy whose name I've forgotten, which is terrible, but it was one of these one name only kind of like Spark or Sparky or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's this sort of slightly wizened older guy, but he's a guitarist, you know.
Right.
And Steve's like, this is whatever his name is. I said, why don't you tell him some of the albums you played on? Yeah. Oh, well, you know, I've been on a few. Yeah. Rumours.
Yeah.
Fleetwood Mac. Hotel California. I'm going, this is fucking unreal. Anyway, I was still smoking in those days, right? So I said to Steve, look, I'm going to go out for a cigarette. As I walk up the stairs, the Edge is coming down the stairs.
Yeah.
And I was just like, hi. He's like, hi. I was like, hello. I fucking went upstairs. I'm outside smoking, like kind of going, hyperventilating because I'm dying to tell the mother of my children, because I'd said to her, I'm going down to see, like, you know, Steve. I don't know what's going to happen. And I came back down, and there was also these two women who were clearly part of the management group who were very kind of hard. They kept looking at me like, who the fuck's this guy, you know?
Yeah.
Because their management is from somewhere in California. They only manage, like, two acts, and U2's one of them, you know, they're all millionaires. Anyway, so I look into the sort of the ops room where the mixing desk is, and there's Steve with the Edge.
Yeah, what?
Just the two of them. And Steve goes like this and motions for me to come in.
Yeah.
So I go in, and they're sort of sitting on he's on a couch, Steve's on, and the Edge has got his Apple MacBook Pro, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And Steve says, yeah, I've listened to this. And this is one of the songs from the new album. It's called Landlady, right? You played it.
I hope you said
and the Edge goes, well, this is the thing, right? He actually turns to me and goes, what do you think of that? And they're arguing about whether it's got fucking the guitar on it or not, you know, and Steve's going, well, it's like the thing that, you know, I told you about.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, I'm like, it sounds pretty good to me. I said, I don't know, you know. I then walk out and Adam Clayton's there, very tall.
Yeah.
He says, oh, hi. And Steve says, oh, this is the guy I was telling you about. He works for TalkSport. He goes, oh, I love TalkSport. I always listen to it.
Brilliant.
It was fucking surreal.
Brilliant.
But then,
was Bono there?
Bono wasn't there. No. I had to leave before he arrived.
Yeah.
Steve said, I think you'd probably go there because I think Bono's on his way.
Oh, right.
So I guess he doesn't like to
He doesn't want to be crowded.
Too many fucking, you know, tossers that he's never heard of. But I mean, I literally, it was one of those, amazing. I walked out and I was just like, oh my God.
It is amazing, isn't it?
And it's amazing how starstruck you get.
Yeah.
Because of the fact
I'm glad you said that, because I've always felt it's like a weakness. You know, when you meet someone famous and, and you're totally distracted by it.
I mean, it's funny, if it's a work situation, they come into the studio.
Yeah.
Or if I'm working and interviewing them, I don't get like that. But that wasn't what was going on. You know, it was a completely separate thing.
There's a great story by Garrison Keillor, who we've mentioned before.
Prairie Home Companion.
That's right. But he wrote this short story about how you should behave when you meet, you know, someone very, very famous. And he says, rather than going up to them, you know, and gushing and asking for an autograph, pestering, he said, just walk past them and just quietly say, hey, man, like your work,
right?
And walk off.
Right.
And then he tells the story of then what will happen, right?
Yeah.
The guy will be piqued with curiosity, you know, and he'll come up to you and he'll say, what is it you like about my work?
Yeah.
You know, and the story goes on and on and on until you get to the point where you're having to kick the guy out of your house.
Well, I guess you can see that. I mean, I've certainly met... I mean, the day I think I've told you about the day I had to go and see Gordon Brown.
Yeah.
And you know, you're suddenly there's a moment where you're sitting there and you're thinking, I'm actually sitting here, inside the Treasury, talking to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, on my own.
It's ridiculous. Isn't
and he's asking me about my children.
Yeah. Do you think there's
and
a?
And you
sense
suddenly
of,
go.
Do you have that? I mean, I've completely got that imposter syndrome. You know, where I just think I shouldn't be.
No, I don't
here.
Have that. No.
No. Well,
no
every
quite the
time,
reverse, actually.
Well, I have to
in
sort
my
of.
Case. Why haven't I been here before now?
I have to sort of mentally reverse it, you know. So I go through this thing, say, oh, I shouldn't be here, you know, I shouldn't be asking this guy a question. And then I think, well, why shouldn't I, you know? And, but it always occurs to me that
I know what you mean. And that's probably not a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I'm sort of almost too blasé sometimes because there are times when I think, oh, I should have asked for a picture.
Yeah,
because I'm so busy being blasé that I didn't get the picture. You know, I've got no pictorial. I've got a picture of me and Steve Lillywhite, but I didn't want to say to the Edge,
no proof.
Can I do a picture with you? Because I thought that would be naff.
Yeah,
but and so
right.
I didn't do it.
But
you know,
that's good. That's
I suppose
good.
So. But one of the best ones was when I first sort of met Campbell and all those guys.
Yeah.
Peter Mandelson and all that. There was a guy called Bill Haggerty. Do you remember Bill Haggerty?
Yeah, yeah.
Who I think is still around. I think he's still
around.
He was editor of Sunday People.
He
was the first.
Campbell's Diaries.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, which is a hell of a show.
He was the first sort of proper editor that I was mates with.
Right, right.
Because I got to know him in New York.
Yeah.
And then he suddenly got made editor of the Sunday People.
Yeah.
So I came back to London one time and he's like, oh, you've got to come for lunch.
Yeah.
And so it was the first time we got to sit in his sort of chauffeur-driven Daimler. We went to the Ivy. I said, this is great, isn't it?
Yeah.
He said, yeah, and they just drop you here,
yeah.
And then they come back and pick you up. I said, this is fucking amazing. And I was there about 26 or something. Anyway. Anyway, he had a party. He had a house in Kew.
Yeah.
And it was one of those right by the river, you know. And everyone was there. It was Blair was there, Brown, fucking... There was the whole New Labour project, Kinnock.
Yeah.
And Mandelson, Campbell. And my very loud American wife was then my wife, so she came with me, you know. And she meets this crowd of people, and she's introduced to this guy. This is Alan Price. And she's like, oh, yeah, you got the same name as that guy from The Animals. He's like, no, I am that guy from The Animals. Because she wasn't prepared for that at all. She was like, oh, my God. Because she was, you know, very much into that stage. Of, and he was Alan Price. He was Alan Price the Geordie from fucking... you know, from The Animals.
As a closer, I've got a follow up to the Monaco story.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny, we then became friends with Johnny and Tiggy, and they invited us to a party at their house. I think it was his 60th or something like this. And Steve Harley's there from Cockney Rebel, right? And Johnny introduces me to Steve Harley, and I said to Steve Harley, mate, I honestly love that song, and he got really arsey, right?
Really?
Well, yeah, because he's obviously got this huge catalogue of music.
And that's the only song anybody knows.
And he looked at me and he said, which song's that? Right. And I got the hump with him.
Yeah.
And I said, it's the only song anyone's fucking heard of yours, mate.
Right. Right.
And that was the end of that conversation.
Yeah. It's not a good look, is it, when you meet famous people, they start fighting with you, you know.
In someone's house.
Oh, God. Well, anyway. those are some of the stories. And we didn't actually, we probably got more of them, actually. But we may have to do another podcast. Yeah, we may
Phil,
have to go
you
on.
Were right.
Well
you were
done, right. Phil.
We filled a podcast, we could probably fill... 10.
We may have to do another couple, but keep sending those those emails in because
what
they do
it? Thought
inspire
police
us.
Pod.
ThoughtPolicePod@gmail.com.
That's it.
This
Thank
is
you.
Thought Police. We'll see you later.
See ya.
Thank you. before that, in the afternoon, I've been sort of going around knocking on people's houses, you know. And apparently, unbeknownst to me, I bore a bit of a striking resemblance to the guy they were looking for. So I was awoken at about 3 o'clock in the morning by two members of Her Majesty's police shaking me, going, go wake up.
Wait. Get up,
what
Fox.
Are you doing? Yeah, I said, what do you mean? What am I fucking having to sleep? Well, what are you doing sleeping here? I said, well, because I haven't got nowhere else to sleep. Yeah. Said, well, who are you? I said, well, I'm a journalist. And they're like, who are you working for?
Yeah.
And I said, I'm working for Star Magazine in America. And they were like, oh yeah. I mean, it was fucking bad news because they said people had been reporting you, been knocking on their doors, looking suspicious.
Looking dodgy.
I don't think I even had an NUJ card at the time, right? And I had, it was all I could do to convince them that literally, you know, I was not the fox, and I was not fucking breaking into people's houses, and I was not either murdering or raping anyone.
That'd
you know?
Be a great novel, wouldn't it?
But it would.
If you were,
well, if they'd arrested me.
No, if you were the fox.
Yeah.
But then you were also the journalist.
Oh yeah.
To hunt down the fox.
Yes. Now that would be.
Wouldn't
good.
That be great? If your name is on the collar,
yes.
then you feel...
They can't just give it to anyone.
Exactly, yeah. It's got a good shelf life. Right. And indeed, it subsequently became Lalani's Eye. Which
that's did, right, didn't
quite
work
have the same
all.
Ring.
No.
But anyway, so we launched the collar, and then about 3 or 4 days later, I get loads of letters in the post. This was before email really taken off. And most of them were from medical students and doctors saying, we do love the column, but you know that Kelly's Eye is medical shorthand for the arsehole, don't you?
Did I ever tell you the story of the fake business I had to set up to buy prawns?
No.
Let me tell you that one.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.